Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
Make work your favorite. That's your favorite, okay?
Okay.
Work is your new favorite.
Fine.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey there, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and it's happy dance time because A, it's Friday, and two, you're about to hear a great podcast. On today's show, we bring you from the amazing podcast, Profit Boss, Hillary Hendershot. And let's stay on that podcaster theme for a minute by bringing you from the Personal Profitability Podcast, Eric Rosenberg. And from the Freedom is Groovy blog, the anonymous blogger, Mr. Groovy. Man, how did he get that name? I wish I thought of it first. But that's not all. On today's FreshBooks Human Resources segment, we welcome back the evil HR lady, Suzanne Lucas. Now here he is, the guy winding up your work week, Joe Saul Sehi.
Whether you're wrapping up your work week or you're working this weekend, you know what? It still is Friday, and that means it is another episode of the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey, everybody. I am Joe Saul Sehi, Average Joe Money. And you know what? I feel three times better than I did back on May 6th, 1991 because of the fact that my new best friend, Kent, sent me some socks. And I got to start off the show by just saying a big fat thanks to Kent. I got socks and I got a t-shirt from Kent because he puts on a bike race. He created it. And I saw it sold out this year, a 100K bike race in Iowa called the, I'm going to mess this up, Kent, but it's the Kirem, C-I-R-R-E-M. I'll link to it in the show notes at stackingbenjamins.com so you can check out the race for yourself. But anyway, he said he likes to bike and also run in these, and these are killer socks, Kent. So thank you very much. Wrote a nice note to me about how much he likes the show. And we like listeners like Kent. It's amazing to think that anybody listens to this. But you know what else is amazing? A trip to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. When you go to Magnify Money, you may be surprised to find that you save $450 on awesomeness when you restructure your debt. If you have your debt under control, guess what? Time to get rewards. And our friend Nick Clements over at Magnify Money says, you know what? If you get less than 2%, you're leaving money on the table. StackingBenjamins.com/magnify money is the place to go when you're reexamining that checking account, the savings account, debt products, whatever it might be. You know, no longer do you have to go down the road to one bank and just say, what have you got, when you've got the internet at your fingertips, and the best place out there is MagnifyMoney.com. And the place that Magnify Money actually calls the best place when they're comparing is SoFi. If you head to stackybenjamins.com/SOFI, you know what you're going to find? They're the leader in marketplace lending. And what that means is that they will help you with student loans, personal loans, and mortgages. Here's how it works. You point your browser to stackybenjamins.com/SoFi, and it'll ask you what type of help you're looking for. And from that point, you'll just fill in a few details. And our friend Dan Macklin over at SoFi says, in a few seconds in most cases, you'll know everything about how they can work with you. You'll pick from different terms, check out the interest rates on variable and fixed rate options to get the ball rolling. In fact, it's so easy. MagnifyMoney.com lists their fine print rating as A+, meaning it's all super easy to understand. You're looking for lower rates and a good partner. They're looking for a new member to help for your mortgage, student loans, or personal loans. StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. And you know what? They'll throw in $100 because you're friends with us if you use our link for your student loan refinance or your next personal loan. StackingBenjamins.com/SOFI. Hey, great roundtable today. Really awesome. We've got three fantastic minds in the personal finance community. Can't wait for you to hear from them. And for the most part, two out of three, new to the show. So you're going to hear some fresh new voices on the Stacking Benjamin Show this week while we give our regulars the week off. But also, speaking of regulars, we're going to make up for it in the middle. The FreshBooks HR segment, talking about all things human resources. Our friend with my favorite by far human resource blog, the evil HR lady, Suzanne Lucas, coming down to the basement. So exciting show. Let's rock. All right, let's walk across the basement here and turn on My Dad Shortwave, see if we can get some of the greatest minds in podcasting. And this week, a gentleman from one of my favorite blogs on the line. But let's start with the one person who's actually been here before. She is Miss Profit Boss herself, certified financial planner, Hillary Hendershot. What's going on?
Represent. Proud to be back. Thank you.
We were surprised you came back. We were so happy when you said, yes, you'd come back because that's rare.
Well, here. I've been listening to your show and you are having some women on. So I feel like I need to, you know, make sure to show up and bring the female vibe.
Are you kidding, Hillary? Paula Pant, who's usually on, she like runs circles around all of us.
I know. And so, someday I'll get on with Paula and she and I will have a great time.
You'll take over is what you'll do.
We'll take over because that's what we do.
You are in San Jose and we're going to go down the coast to Ventura, California, where I can't believe it's his first time on the show, but Mr. Personal Productivity Podcast himself.
Personal Profitability.
Profitability Podcast. Eric Rosenberg. I can't pronounce anything today, Eric.
I've wanted to be on this show for years, so I feel like now that I'm here, I've made it. This is that point on internet fame where I've made it. I've hit the big time.
Yeah, that's it. It's actually that time when you know your career's probably over because you had to stoop to coming on this show. So what's going on at the podcast?
It's been great. I recently hit 1 year and 3 months of podcasting. I started it last January, and it's been a fun ride. I've had some awesome guests. You know, I've had you on the show, had some big names in the personal finance blogging community like J.D. Roth and Luke Harlan Landis, or Harlan Luke Landis. I don't know what his real name is. Right. No one really knows.
No, he goes by whatever you wanted to call him that day.
Flexo, that'll work. but it's been fun. Yeah, I've been talking to great people. It's been growing. It's been a blast.
Well, it's a great show, and I'm glad you could join us. And you know what's funny? When you and I met, Eric, I had a non-compete going with the gentleman I sold my financial planning business to. So I was anonymous. And when you and I first met, I was blogging as Average Joe Money on the internet. And a lot of my favorite bloggers...
I still think of you as Average Joe. That's still your name in my head.
And a lot of my favorite bloggers on the internet blog anonymously, as does this man whose piece we talked about a few weeks ago here from the Freedom is Groovy blog. It's Mr. Groovy himself from the great state of, can we say where you're at?
Oh, absolutely. North Carolina.
You say that almost with a North Carolina accent.
Oh, yeah. You could tell I'm not from North Carolina, huh?
Might not be originally, right?
I'm from New York.
Who knew? I can't believe with that accent you'd be from New York.
That's my accent, the bane of my existence.
Yeah, so tell everybody about the Freedom is Groovy blog. What do you guys do there?
Oh, geez, Joe, you really want to know?
I asked you the question, didn't I? Absolutely.
We just recently retired, and we're writing about our experiences in a groovy way. We kind of have a twisted take on personal finance, as you well know. We write about Hannibal Lecter. We write about sweet transvestites, and we write about sluts.
You're right. We had a piece on about being an opportunity slut. Linda P. Jones was on the show that week, and she said, just to clarify, I'm the guest, not the slut, which is good. We all had to clarify that. So
Linda's awesome, but she disappointed me that day.
Oh, because she disagreed with you. How about that? Well,
Greg was on my side. I couldn't believe it.
Now you get to get back at her because you're on the show. So,
all right.
Well, let's roll, guys, because we've got a lot to talk about. Our first article comes to us from Fox Business. Americans are dying with an average of $62,000 of debt. This is by Christine DeGangi. She says, you're probably going to die with some debt to your name. Most people do. In fact, 73% of consumers had outstanding debt when they were reported as debt. I wonder how long there was from the time they died to report as debt. According to December 2016 data provided to credit.com by credit bureau Experian. Hillary, let's start with you. Did that number surprise you?
No, but the thing the article didn't really mention is how many of those people have enough net assets to pay off the debt, because the creditors are going to get paid. If someone dies and they've got money in accounts elsewhere, they're just going to take it out of the estate before the beneficiaries get to it. But, you know, I feel like 90% of the articles about where Americans are financially are abysmal. So this didn't really surprise me at all.
And most debt, it appears,
is on $4,500 in credit card debt, $17,000 in auto loans, personal loans of $14,793, student loans at $25,000. That one also sadly didn't shock me.
What really blew me away is this auto loan number, $17,000. I mean, who's buying cars until they die? I mean, I've had one car. I've had it for about 10 years. It runs fine. I don't have a loan. I don't have a payment. Are people really needing to buy new cars every few years until they die and keep paying money on it? That part's kind of blowing my mind.
Well, unless you, like I explained to our listeners last week, unless you want to spend a couple of days in beautiful McAllister, Oklahoma, which is fine. Great city. But I didn't expect to be there when my car died.
I feel like there's somewhere in between having your car break down in McAllister, Oklahoma, and dying with a $17,000 auto loan bill. Something in the middle, right?
Yeah, but isn't it, Mr. Groovy, isn't it kind of surprising that not the fact that people have this debt, but that more people don't have a pay off your debt first kind of attitude, it appears?
Yeah, I would agree. I'm with Eric on this one. I was pleasantly surprised by the credit card balance, but the auto loan and the student loan, that was a little unnerving. You know, I don't even know what the solution is.
Well, let's ask the certified financial planner. Let's say this is an average person, $4,500 in credit card debt, $17,000 auto loan, personal loans, $14,000, student loans of $25,000. Where do you start, Hillary?
See, I have this picture of 70 to 80 year olds carrying this kind of debt, right? Because that's kind of the average lifespan of people. And so, I mean, the article didn't say they took a snapshot of people who happened to die at the age of 40 or 50. So honestly, if someone comes across my dashboard with that kind of debt and they're in retirement, I wish them very well. And I pat them on the back and say, let me buy you lunch.
And that's it. You're saying, don't hire me.
I'm like, you blew it, buddy. I mean, okay. So let me give you a real answer. If you're going to start paying off that kind of debt, you obviously have consistent payments going to the student loans. Obviously, you want to look for, well, definitely the highest interest rate debt. But I think people sometimes get more motivated by paying off certain debts. So, for example, if you still got student loans 20 years after you got your degree, man, let's hammer those out, right? Let's just get those off your, let's just get those off the chopping block.
Not even worried about the interest rate. Just go with the thing that's going to keep you motivated. More behavioral finance kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, some credit cards are 15, 16%. Yeah, you got to take care of those first. Yeah. But ultimately, this is a long-term chore, paying off $40,000, $45,000 in debt. You're going to be at this for a few years. So let's keep you motivated.
Mr. Groovy, did you guys pay off your debt before you retired? Did you wipe everything out?
Oh, absolutely. We were very fortunate. We sold our condo at the height of the real estate boom in 2006. That wiped out all our debt and it enabled us to pay for a house outright in North Carolina. So we're very fortunate. I got a question for Hillary. At what age do children speak to their adult parents about their finances? Is there any age or we just leave that alone?
Well, I'll toss that one back to you right over the tennis ball net because my response is, well, they often ask, but parents also often decline to respond, mm-hmm. You know, and more power to the family that is able to have open communication about finances. But, you know, you got to imagine if you're rolling into your seventh decade with $45,000 in personal debt, you probably are a little either embarrassed or maybe not having all your marbles upstairs, right? So this is not a conducive situation for an open conversation about money.
And it doesn't have to be either or. You can have very few marbles upstairs and be embarrassed. It can be both.
Right. Right. I mean, and that's like entrenched debt at that point, if you really are kind of at that age. And so there's probably money mindset issues we have to overcome too.
Eric, in your family, like with your parents, are your parents open about their money and where they have it and whether they have debt or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I was lucky to grow up in a family where my grandpa was a college business professor. And for my 8th birthday, he gave me a general ledger book so I could start tracking my income and expenses. Like I wasn't even 10 years old. So talking about money has been a huge part of my family as long as I can remember. And now that I have 2 finance degrees, my dad comes to me confidently and says, oh, do you think this investment's right? You know, fortunately, my parents aren't dealing with, you know, giant debt loads or anything. It's more about where to invest retirement assets. But, you know, having open, nice conversations with your family about money, I think is extremely important, especially like if you're in our situation where you might have aging parents who could use a little extra help.
Yeah. Mr. Groovy, do you have parents? Is that why you asked the question?
Yes. And they're in their mid 70s. So they get into that age. I mean, physically they're okay, but mentally they're pretty sharp. And it's something we got to discuss eventually.
Yeah. I can't believe I asked you if you have parents. You say, no, Joe, I was hatched. I don't have any
That's
parents.
That's quite all right.
That's why I don't have a belly button. Because I didn't grow the normal way.
What's the big takeaway? I mean, Hillary, if we've got all this debt and this debt goes with us to our grave, do kids have to pay for it or is the debt wiped out?
No, your heirs will pay for it as long as there's balances or assets that are there to pay it off before, so the creditors can get paid. And the article mentions specifically the example of, let's say you die and you've got a bunch of debt and the only asset that you leave is the home that your kids are living in. Maybe the kids moved in to save costs or they're taking care of you, but they need that place to live. And now if you're gone and the creditors need to be paid, they will be in a forced sale situation. So they'll have to sell the house to pay off the creditors, which you can imagine could be an inconvenience and a heartache.
But just to clarify, they have to pay it out of the estate. If the estate's empty, are the kids still on the hook if their name's not on the debt?
No. If you die with just debt, your debt will die with you.
So the lesson is go into hock up to your eyeballs and disinherit your kids.
That's what I said. Yeah.
No harm, no foul. Yeah. That is completely the wrong lesson. Right. Let's move on to our second piece of the day, which comes to us from MarketWatch. I love this one. It's an opinion piece written by Ben Carlson. Says, if you're comfortable with your investments, you might be in trouble. Says diversification is about owning both leaders and laggards in the financial markets. He opens up this piece by talking about the asset class quilt. And we never called it the asset class quilt. We always called it the periodic table. Hillary, what do you guys call it?
The Skittles chart.
Yeah. And what we're referring to is it's year by year and it shows a bunch of different asset classes. And we'll have a link on the show notes at stackybenjamins.com. If you'd like to follow along, you can just click on that and you'll see the chart right here in the piece. But it shows how different asset classes respond in different years. So 2007 is an example. REITs, a real estate investment trust, are on the bottom at -16%. But in 2010, they're on the top at 28.3%. And they're all over the place. And it makes, like Hillary said, a Skittles chart. So, Eric, when it came to this piece, thoughts about diversification? What's the first thing you thought when you read this?
When I read the headline, I thought, get over yourself. If you're comfortable with your investments, you might be in trouble. That's the wrong attitude to take. You know, I'm a big fan of the Warren Buffett approach. Do like 90% in an S&P 500 index fund, 10% in short-term government bonds, and just leave it alone. But for people who want something a little more complex looking at this, you know, I've looked at investing in REITs myself, and it's an interesting thing to look at. But you should just be comfortable with the idea that investing can sometimes be uncomfortable. You'll have up years, you'll have down years. But if you look at the compound annual growth rate of the S&P 500 over the last 30 or 40 years, you're going to see a 7 to 8% average return. So yeah, there's bad years, 2007, 2008, but it always ends up coming back and then some.
But I think, Mr. Groovy, that's Eric's approach, I mean, is a very educated approach. I think for the average person out there, you know, I want to keep the thing that's always at the top of the chart, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Eric nailed it. It's all about ego. When I started my investment career, I was always, you know, chasing returns. And it's a tough habit to get out of, but you got to do it. You know, you got to be comfortable with missing out.
Yeah. Hillary, you know, asset allocation. Do your clients think you're from the moon when you tell them you want to sell something that's been just on a tear and you want to put it in an asset class that's a laggard? They think they want to fire you then?
Yeah, they say I'm kind of crazy, but I do set it up from the very first appointment. My clients get access to not just the S&P 500, but lots of other geographical asset classes. You can see them here on this, what I call the Skittles chart, small cap stocks, international, emerging markets, and REITs. And one year I actually work for my mother and her husband are clients, and they came in and it was a year the S&P 500 had been, I think 2013, the S&P 500 did really, really well. And they came in at the beginning of 2014. They said, we want more of this. And I said, not only can you not have more, but I'm going to sell part of it and buy what sucked last year.
and they're thinking, what did we do to our daughter to deserve this?
Yeah, you know, it's all about a consistent message. But I mean, I thought that the headline of this article was, it's kind of one of those clickbaity kind of headlines. If you're comfortable with your investments, you might be in trouble. It sort of insinuates danger, but that the article is really sort of a fairly basic treatment of the topic of diversification.
Yeah, but Eric, whenever I pat myself on the back because I made an awesome investment choice, I'm looking at my returns. And of course, like everybody, I'm looking at every single line item, hoping that they're all going to be up a bajillion percent, which is like the piece says, they never are, right? But I look at those ones on the top and I think about how damn brilliant I am. And I think that is the first sign that I'm screwing up.
You know, I'm going to quote Warren Buffett twice answering one article's discussion. He also said at one point, when everyone's really confident, that's when you should be scared. And when everyone else is scared, that's when you should get really confident in your investing. And that's kind of true to some of this we're discussing. You know, after doing really, really well for a while, you're just going to want to load more money into a stock. But odds are it might have already had its run up. So the two stocks that I've invested in that have had the worst return were ones that were kind of emotionally driven, companies that I really liked. I'll admit I'm a pro wrestling fan and I lost a bunch of money on WWE stock. And I love going to Vegas to the nightclubs. And one of my biggest losers in my portfolio right now is Wynn Resorts. So don't buy stocks of companies that I enjoy, the entertainment. But some other stocks, you know, I bought Amazon and Google and they've done really, really well. So that's part of that portfolio. You have to look at it as a whole and not just pat yourself on the back on a year everyone is doing well.
At what point do you decide, Eric, that this investment is a loser and it's got to go? Because according to this piece, you know, the stock's going to be a loser for a while, maybe.
You know, that's, again, going back to that simple basic ETF driven portfolio, you shouldn't have to worry too much about one stock going up or down, because if your whole investment return is loaded into one stock or one company or even one ETF, unless it's, you know, a very broad market fund, you're too concentrated and you could have a problem. So, you know, when you're looking at the Skittles chart, you know, to me, it doesn't really tell me anything that's going to change how I want to invest, because I know I'm focused on the long term. And, you know, buying like a REIT, for example, had a couple bad years on here and a lot of good years. I know if I buy one, it could be bad next year, but in the long run, it'll pay off because, you know, people need places to live. People have to pay rent and buy property. So you're thinking long term on how a business structure works. That's where I really try to put my money.
All right, Mr. Groovy, be honest with me here. Let's look at this chart for a second. 2008. Uh-oh. Right? Take a look at 2008.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking.
The very bottom of that chart says emerging markets down 48.9. You've got to be like me and think, I want to put as much cash in that baby as possible.
Absolutely. But my play money is 2 to 5% of my portfolio. So that's all I'll throw at something that was a dog of the Dow the year before. Otherwise, total stock market index fund and total bond market index fund. That's it.
You guys all have.
But I agree with you.
You guys all have halos on. It's annoying.
Like, I don't want to invest sexy. If you're investing sexy, you're probably investing to impress somebody else. And that's not what's going to give you the big returns.
Yeah. Hillary.
Hillary, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just got a quick question for Hillary again. With her clients, are they scrapping the Skittle chart? Are they going to just total stock index funds now?
What do you mean scrapping the Skittles chart?
I mean, they're not doing small cap, large cap, mid cap, bonds, REITs, all
sure.
that stuff.
We got indexes for all those.
No, but he's asking.
I'm saying total.
I think, are you scrapping all that and just going total market index fund? Bam.
Yeah, just one, you know, one asset class.
Oh, no, no, no. We do professional portfolio construction, 9 different funds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Why the difference?
Why not just do a total market fund?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because you get better diversification and you get to be more specific about how you layer in the asset classes. So now I feel like I'm being super boring. But the big fund companies, I mean, I work only exclusively with dimensional fund advisors, don't even offer a total market balanced fund, they call it, that contains all 9 asset classes like that. Their total market fund only contains 5. So you miss out on exposure to emerging markets and to REITs and things like that.
Yeah,
I'm just a little offended that you implied that talking about RIPs, REITs and TIPS, sorry, RIPs, I'm making up new asset classes, is boring. This is fun stuff.
I know. We're a bunch of money nerds. None of this is boring. Harry, what are you talking about?
I don't know. I always want to edutain. I want to edutain them.
Eric got a ledger chart at age 9, Hillary. He got a ledger chart.
I'm sleeping just hearing that.
This is the most excitement he's had this month. You kidding me?
Right. We're talking about inflation protected securities. This is fun.
I got to take a quick time out from the awesome discussion with Hillary, Eric, and Mr. Groovy. Love that monitor. To say hello to everyone out there who is either a freelancer or somebody thinking about being a freelancer, it's time for the FreshBooks HR segment. And you know what? If you've never raced against the clock to wrap up three projects, prep for a meeting later in the afternoon, all while trying to tackle mountain of paperwork, you don't know what you're missing, because every freelancer out there will tell you that all of the bad stuff about working for yourself counter by a ton of great stuff working for yourself. And our friends at FreshBooks are there to help you make the rewards so worth it. Because as you know, the working world's changed with the growth of the internet. There's never been more opportunities for you if you're self-employed. And to meet that need, FreshBooks is excited to announce the launch of their all-new version of their cloud accounting software. If you hung out with us a couple weeks ago and with Tim and Gigi from FreshBooks, you saw it yourself, just how easy it is. The all-new FreshBooks, not only ridiculously easy, but it's packed full of powerful features. You can create and send professional looking invoices in less than 30 seconds, set up online payments with just a couple clicks, get paid up to 4 days faster because you can hook up automatic payments to your invoices, see when your client's looking at your invoice, and put an end to the guessing game. Did they really open it? Have they seen it? Did it get lost in the mail? Do I really have to send them another one? FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to Stacking Benjamins fans. To claim it, here's what you do. Head to stackybenjamins.com/FreshBooks. That's stackybenjamins.com/FreshBooks. And then put Stacking Benjamins in the how did you hear about us section. You know what happens then? They know that we sent you, so they're more likely to stay our sponsor. But also, you get that 30-day free trial and you get to check it out. Cool thing is, you don't got to give them a bunch of information about you. You just start the 30-day free trial and you're off and running. So really, really like that company. And if you are an entrepreneur and you're not using FreshBooks, you deserve it to yourself to give them a 30-day free trial. We were using other software and flipped over to FreshBooks, and we haven't looked back since. That's part of the reason why we were so excited when they agreed to become our sponsor. All right, it's time for the FreshBooks HR segment and our good friend Suzanne Lucas coming down to the basement. Let's say hello. In the hot seat in our FreshBook, you know, we always call it the FreshBook FinTech segment, but today again, it's the FreshBook HR segment. It's the one and only evil HR lady, Suzanne Lucas. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'm so happy you're here instead of, you know, in the Swiss Alps, skiing.
I know the basement is much better than the Swiss Alps.
Way, way better. Glad you came all the way back here for this segment.
Way better. It smells better.
Now your nose, why is your nose growing? Right. So this piece that you wrote appeared at Inc., and we'll have a link to it in our show notes at stackybenjamins.com, but it's called How to Make Sure Your Child Doesn't Need Adulting Classes. And I thought, as everybody's gearing up now for spring break, this is the perfect time to teach your kids some adulting. What's this all about?
Well, this came from, there's a school in Maine that is teaching, I was going to say kids, but it's not kids, teaching young adults how to be adults. And to do things like get up when your alarm goes off and pay your bills on time. They say they have classes on how to fold a fitted sheet, but I don't think that that's true. I think you have to be a wizard to do that.
I know. I can't even do that. And I'm 49 years old, right?
I know. Me neither.
Let's talk about some of these skills, because these are cool ones, I think, for parents to do with kids. And it's funny because, you know, you've all read that meme on Facebook, the one about, you know, thank goodness I learned about the Pythagorean theorem versus how to balance my checkbook, because all those times that I've had to make sure that the triangle's correct.
Exactly.
In my life, that made a ton of sense. But number one on your list is cooking. And I think cooking is a huge skill that, you know, with spring break coming up, is a great thing to teach kids.
It is, because not only does it make your life easier if your kids can make dinner, but in the future, it will save them money. It will keep them from getting as fat. I would say keep them from getting fat, but home cooking hasn't saved my pant size. And it saves a fortune if you can do it. And it's not hard. If you can read, you can cook.
Yeah, it certainly is, you know, and it's an attractive skill. And I know that you know, I'm not really concerned about my eighth grader finding the perfect mate later on. But I know that if your significant other can cook, that's a cool trait to have.
It surely is.
Yeah. Number two on the list is sewing. That's one I never learned.
Well, see, because you're a slacker.
how did you know?
Sewing is less important than it used to be because cost of clothing has just dropped dramatically. And the cost of sewing things yourself is actually more expensive now than it is to buy them as a general rule. But you should be able to hem your own pants or something. One of the things that cracks me up, because I live in an expat kind of community, we have a little expat Facebook page, and people are always posting, can anybody recommend a seamstress to hem my pants? And I'm thinking, hemming your pants takes 10 minutes, but because you live in Switzerland, it's going to cost you 75 francs, which is equal to about $75 to get that done.
Well, and
I
think of the number of times like a button pops off a shirt, right?
Right.
I mean, just even very simple sewing. Number three, cleaning the bathroom. Holy cow.
How to clean the bathroom?
My kids are in college, and so you can just imagine.
Well, see, this is where I confess to not being a great parent, because I hate cleaning, so I have a cleaning lady who cleans my bathroom, which means that I haven't taught my children how to clean, and I'm thinking maybe if I pay her extra, she'll teach them.
I do remember learning from my mother how to effectively scrub the toilet bowl and how to get behind it, things like that. So good stuff there. Number four, cleaning the kitchen, which is huge.
It is huge. And that's something that you can't depend on a cleaning lady to do for you unless you have one coming in every day, you know, and you need to understand how to do different things, like how to clean the stove without killing yourself.
My roommate in college would always make himself food, and he would completely clean everything before he ate it. His food was always cold, but that's how, I think the correct phrase is, anal retentive my roommate was. It was amazing though, because our kitchen was always spotless.
Man, I should have moved in with your roommate.
I know. He was quite a find among guys. Definitely not a trait that I had at that time. Number five, a basic household task, which is how to change a light bulb, toilet paper roll, vacuum cleaner bag. You know what I like about these, Suzanne? These are little things as adults we take for granted, but somebody teaches how to do every single one of those somewhere along the way. And we should probably think about doing the same thing with our children.
Well, we really should. You know, I was thinking things about changing light bulbs. With today's long lasting light bulbs, like our kitchen light, we've lived in the same apartment for 8 years. In those 8 years, I have changed it twice. So it's not something that, you know, the kids see happening all of the time. It's something that I would actively have to teach them how to take out this halogen bulb and put in the new one, because it lasts for years.
Yeah. Number six, which is near and dear to our heart here on the show, obviously, is how to have a budget. We started including our kids on some of our basic financial meetings for the family. Do you like that idea, or do you have other ideas of how to teach kids how to budget?
I do like the idea of including your kids on that and trying to get your kids the concept of how much things cost, because they literally have no idea. My 8-year-old will frequently ask me, do you have $1 million? And I say, no. Do you have $100? Yes. You know, but to him, what's the difference between $1 million and $100? Well, there's a lot of difference in there. And understanding, you know, how much your mortgage is or your rent and how much groceries cost are all really valuable. But I confess that we don't do that, but we're not very good at budgeting. That's your area.
Got to come hang out in the basement more often, Suzanne. That's what you got to do.
I do. Yes. But the thing that we are good at is making our kids earn money for things that they want.
Well, and that's number eight on your list, which is how to work hard. And, you know, if you ask either one of my kids who are 21 now, if you ask them what our family mantra is, they'll tell you that it's that we're never outworked. And that's always been our mantra, is that, you know, sometimes somebody's smarter than you, but nobody can work harder.
And that's an excellent family mantra. We should adapt that. Ours is similar, which is when in doubt, go up, which comes from our hiking habits. You know, when there comes two trails, you take the high one.
Nice.
But the concept is that, you know, face a difficult decision, you do the hard thing is usually the right thing to do.
Oh, I like that one too. Number nine is laundry. Another attractive habit if your kids are going to find a mate.
You know, it is. And it's amazing to me how many parents don't teach their kids how to do laundry. And this is not and new thing. I remember in college, you know, going to the laundromat and having young freshman boys come up to me and being like, how do I do this? And I know that they weren't hitting on me because it was really obvious that they were just completely and totally clueless. It would have been a good pickup line if they were trying to pick me up, which they weren't. They just really had no idea.
Well, and it's funny because my mom taught me how to do ironing, and it was funny because I absolutely love doing ironing, and still to this day, Cheryl knows I love ironing, so whenever anything has to be ironed, I always get the task.
I like ironing too because it's something that you do and then it's done, like, and it looks, you can see a difference.
Yeah, that's exactly what I like. There's a true cause and effect there. I heat up the iron, I can totally see the spot that's been ironed, the spot that's not been ironed. It's very cathartic, I think.
Yeah.
Number 10 is the big one on your list, which is teaching your kid failure. And I'm sure that's not by showing them what a loser mom or dad is.
Right. And basically what I just do is I push them down the stairs once a week. I'm just kidding. Don't call child protective.
I was going to say, that joke's funny for parents because they know that's not the case. But non-parents right now are you serious? That's horrible.
Those are speed dialing.
Yeah, right.
But they can't speak German, so they couldn't report me anyway. So there, huh?
Right. But the importance of failure.
Failure is so important. And you read about the mental health breakdowns of these college students because they can't handle simple failure. They can't handle a bad grade because their parents have always fixed it for them and have handled everything that needed to be handled. And the schools didn't want to put up with it. And the neighbors didn't want to put up with it. So, you know, we just let mom and dad fix everything. And if you do that, your kid is never going to be capable of handling real life because, you know, you can go back to an English teacher and argue for and get your grade raised, but only one person gets that promotion. Right. And if they've handed it out to somebody else, no amount of your whining is going to change that. You know, it's just, that's just life. There's one slot for the job. There's one slot for the promotion. There's one person that gets this. You need to be able to take failure. If you can't take failure, you can't take feedback. You can't ever improve. And that just is so critical for success.
I think that's so huge because it's not about whether you fail. It's what you do after that's important. And if you can't take failure at all, you're lost when it comes to how to respond. You know, I mean, you look at companies. Great companies statistically are better at service recovery than they are even good at service. Like they know when something goes wrong with a customer, they know how to fix it and make people become a raving fan. And I think doing that in your career, learning how to do that in your life is a huge thing to know.
It really is. It's the being able to recover from things. And as I tell my kids, I don't care if you make mistakes. I don't care that you dropped the glass on the floor and broke it, which happened today. What I care about is, do you clean up your mess after you've made that mistake? Right. Do you fix what you've done wrong? Do you apologize after you've accidentally kicked somebody or on purpose kicked somebody? Not that my children would ever do that. But it's the recovery part that's really hard. And if you get a bad grade on a test, do you then go back and learn the stuff that you didn't know the first time? Because that's what's going to make the difference.
Yeah, that is huge. And I think that's a great place to leave it. So what's going on at your blog at evilhrlady.org, Suzanne?
Well, we are talking about gig employment.
Excellent.
So that's exciting.
Boy, we are definitely in the gig economy now, I think.
We are. And I'm kind of happy about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. We'll link to the blog on our show notes at stackybenjamins.com because it's always fun. And there's always somebody asking a question that either A, I would have never asked in a million years and I'm wondering how you're going to answer it, or B, it's hilarious, or C, it's one that seems so straightforward that I'm wondering how you're not screaming at the person and you tend to be very nice to them, which is amazing to me.
It's a skill.
Well, thanks for hanging out.
Anytime.
And again, we'll have a link to Suzanne's site, The Evil HR Lady, at our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com. I just love reading The Evil HR Lady. And as you know, if you've listened for a long time, there's a few people less evil than Suzanne Lucas. All right, let's get back to part two, second half. Halftime's over. Second half of our thrilling discussion with Hillary Hendershot from Profit Boss. Eric Rosenberg from Personal Profitability, and from the Freedom is Groovy blog, the blogger known as Mr. Groovy. Our third piece comes to us from The Balance and is under the Frugal Living area, written by Aaron Hufstetler. How to use your home to earn extra money. And Aaron goes over, how many do we got here? Like eight or nine?
Seven.
All right, thanks. I can't count. There's seven crazy ways to make extra money. So if you don't have any extra money, but you've got a house, you can maybe make a buck or two. Any of these speak to you, Eric? Anything on this list? Something that you might do?
Well, I just thought they were missing some things on this list. Like I don't write for them anymore, but still a great company. A company called Turo used to be Relay Rides. You know, companies like that, you can rent out your car when you're not using it. So like, I know I'm a work at home blogger right now. My car battery dies because I use my car so little. Like it could go like a month without needing my car. I was thinking, why don't I rent that out to make a little extra money? There's always all these things you can make extra money with. So what excites me is that it's getting out there and people are doing it.
Hillary, any of these you like to make an extra couple bucks?
You know, I have a new baby and the idea of having strange people trying to do commerce on my property all the time, it just is a little weird. I love the sharing economy concept and I'm a big user of Uber and Lyft and sorry to the feminists who think I should take the Uber app off my phone. I will not do that. But if you have to make an extra buck, goodness knows, and I've shared my own financial feelings publicly often, that there was a time in my life when I was definitely trading time and resources for money, and you got to do what you got to do.
Would you, if you needed money bad right now, number five on this list, I think is the craziest one here. turn your yard into campsites. What would your neighbors say, Hillary, if you had people camping on your lawn?
I have this like super suburban home. My backyard is literally overlooked. I have a cement retaining wall and is overlooked by a 10-story office building. Not much of a campground.
You're in spot three over by the garage.
Yeah, you could be by the raspberry plant.
It's so awesome.
I have a friend who he didn't pay money, but he went to do one of those. What's that something? AmeriCorps. He went to do AmeriCorps in New Orleans, and you know they don't get a lot of money working in AmeriCorps, and he found someone there that he became friends with and set up a tent in the backyard and lived in the backyard for a while rent free.
Really?
Someone I know actually did that.
Wow.
He was there for months, like 4 months or something. He lived in their backyard in a tent and he could come in and use the bathroom and stuff. He didn't have to pee in the backyard.
Yeah, but that was nice of them to do that to help him out.
Yeah, totally. In New Orleans, you know, great weather when it's not hurricane season. So right. He got to enjoy being outside. I think he set up like a campfire pit by his tent, you know, could roast some marshmallows, hang out, enjoy the jazz.
Number seven on this list, Mr. Groovy, is host a foreign exchange student. I bet you and Mrs. Groovy, you've got like 18 foreign exchange students living at your house, don't you, to make a few bucks?
Yeah, Mrs. Groovy would love that.
I didn't even know that you could get paid to host a foreign exchange student. I thought people did that out of the goodness of their own hearts.
You know, what's the stipend for that?
Aren't we capitalist? Yeah. Every single day they get ramen noodles and you're taking the extra $47 you got. You're pocketing all that money. I can't imagine hosting a foreign exchange student's a great way to make a living. Any of you guys know what that pays?
No, I'm just wondering why people don't set up a dorm next to their house.
Well, there you
go. Have a whole bunch of foreign exchange students, turn it into a business. Essentially, it's a hostel, right?
Set up the campground in Hillary's yard. You're good.
If you're in Silicon Valley, you know, housing is so expensive here. You could probably host Google's intern program or something.
Right.
I read about real story, a guy that worked at Google, probably made $200,000 a year, way more than most of us in this podcast. And he couldn't afford a place to live. So he bought a truck and parked it in the parking lot. And lived in the back of the truck and had change of clothes and a bed in there and just used the showers and the free food inside Google. Man. So he was pretty much doing this as a Google exchange student.
You do what you got to do. Number one on this list is rent out a parking space. Number two, board people's pets. Number three, use your yard to sell things. We did that exactly once. And the sale started at 9 a.m. And we had people at 7:15 in the morning asking when we were going to open. I'm like,
yeah, you're clearly a rookie. Everyone knows that the yard sale people are out at 7 a.m.
Yeah, I totally messed up that one. Rent out your home to a film company. Lots of film companies coming through Texarkana, Texas. I don't know if you guys know that. And then number 5, rent out campsites. Number 6, rent out your shed. And number 7, host a foreign exchange student. Let's talk about some of those crazy, though, things that you did to make money when you needed to make an extra buck. Hillary, you mentioned that there was a time when you were trading. What's like the worst job you had?
Oh, my first job was at Tina's Hallmark in San Jose, California. I was I'm very familiar with the greeting card industry. I sold cards and wrapped gifts. Loved it.
That doesn't sound horrible.
No, but that's not what I was talking about. Many years later, and what you don't know about my story is that I was a certified financial planner doing work, building investment portfolios for people, and was a total overspender. I had this financial crisis of my own, lost a condo and maxed out credit cards. And so that really is what sort of kicked off my money mission. Now I'm all about empowering women to build wealth, but it started with being a total failure myself.
Wow.
By the way, I'm fully recovered. I have a very, very happy financial life now. Things are very good. So just to put a period at the end of that question mark. But when things came to a head for me, I literally couldn't afford my next mortgage payment. And I had no money left. I had spent all my money, maxed out the credit cards. You know, if it wasn't for my mom's couch, I'd have been homeless the next month, you know, or whenever they came to put the padlock on the door or whatever. I mean, I don't know if they actually put a padlock on the door. Okay. But that's what I meant when I said there was definitely a time when I only ate one meal a day. That's how broke I was. $8 a day was my food budget.
Wow. Wow. That's a whole different podcast. But what's sad is that when I was a financial planner working with a big firm, I saw so many people who were in financial planning, giving other people advice about their money, who make your story look like nothing. I knew a guy who bought cars that were far more expensive than he could afford because he said it motivated him to make more money. And the only way he'd make more money is if he had a crushing car payment. That's solid financial planning right there.
This tells me you never hire a financial planner with a nice car.
Right? Exactly. Yeah.
I used to work in real estate and I used to say the real estate agent with the nicest BMW in the parking lot is probably the guy sleeping in it.
That's horrible. Mr. Groovy, worst job ever.
Jeez, that's a good one. I worked for government for 21 years.
For the government?
Wow.
Yeah, the highway department.
Nice.
So I
we've got a pothole outside. Do you know anybody?
I shoveled asphalt. I picked up dead animals. I plowed snow. It was awesome.
Mr. Groovy, aren't you a libertarian?
Yes.
Ish. I mean, I just went to your website and it flat out says you're anti-government. So it's funny that you worked for government for 21 years. Is that what turned you?
He learned to be.
Like I said, I've seen the sausage made and it's pretty scary. Like I said, I try to stay away from politics, but I tell people, you know, if you can, avoid government. That's my only advice.
Eric, how about you? Crazy way you made money or worst job?
The job that paid me the least money, I worked at a Boy Scout camp for 7 summers. In my first summer, I was a counselor in training or CIT. We were paid $5
a week.
And I was working like 16 to 18 hour days with one night off and one 24 hour off a week. What was really funny is we had to buy our own uniforms and my uniform cost more than I made the entire summer. I actually had a little parental help on the uniform.
I was going to say, what's the upside to doing that? Resume experience?
It was fun to work at Boy Scout camp. I got to swim around in the lake and the pool and go hop in a canoe or a sailboat whenever I wanted, or, you know, shoot archery or 22 rifles at targets. It was just fun stuff working at camp. And I actually ended up working there for so long. I earned more every summer. $5 was only the first summer. It went up quite a bit after that. But the biggest benefit I got, there's a scholarship program from a local real estate guy named John Madden, not the same as the football one. And he donated all this money to the Boy Scouts for a scholarship fund that paid for my whole undergrad college.
Oh.
So I got to go to the University of Colorado thanks to the Boy Scouts. No student loans or any other type of loans. I got out of there debt-free.
That's good. That ended up paying off marvelously. That paid great.
And I had no idea when I was making $5 a week that was going to be starting. That was a new thing. So I really hit the jackpot there. And so it ended up being great. And it was a great life experience.
I had a job in high school taking chickens out of their coops and putting them onto a chicken truck to go to slaughter. And I lasted.
That's like Napoleon Dynamite, like the real thing.
Italians.
I lasted.
The talons. So the chickens have large talons.
There you go.
I lasted like half a day. It was horrible. We went to lunch and my brother and I were doing it together and we go sit down with our lunch and we just said, let's get the hell out of here. We didn't even tell anybody we were leaving. We just went to our car and took off.
Did they pay you in eggs?
I don't remember. I do remember my dad getting upset with us because it was a friend of my dad's who called and he's like, at the very least, you should have been polite and told him you were leaving. And so we learned a little life lesson that day. But anyway, very interesting. I like stories about doing what you have to do to make ends meet. I think that's going to do it for today, guys. Let's talk about what's going on where you live. Hillary, I love Profit Boss Radio. It's a fun as heck podcast. Tell us what's going on coming up.
Thank you. Let's see. We're going to do an episode timed for tax time. I've got a former auditor from the IRS coming on to talk about what are the red flags that the IRS looks for. What are the mistakes that you absolutely cannot make on your tax return that will definitely get you in trouble or worse. And I'm going to be doing more solo episodes. I haven't talked about money mindset, money psychology for a while. And I want to talk about a recent survey that came out that said that more and more women have their money sitting in cash. So I kind of span the gamut. I run the gamut in terms of topics.
Yeah, you've had, I'm looking at the topics and actually the day that this came out, I said, oh God, no, because I was sure we were going to be number one on this list. Episode 59 is the top 10 worst advice I've heard on financial podcast. And I went, oh, shit. She's on to us. This is going to, Stacky Benjamin's going to be like the top three of these.
Number one is like everything I've ever heard on Stacky Benjamin's.
Like, oh, no. Yeah, but that was a great episode. Very clickbaity, by the way.
I got a little opinionated in that episode. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to be a little bit more controversial, you know, polarize people.
Got a little surly, right? Good stuff. And we'll link to it. We'll link to it on the show. No, it's at stackybenjamins.com. Eric, I don't know if people know what a big deal you are.
Yeah, I even have t-shirts that let people know I'm kind of a big deal in case they don't know who they're dealing with when we meet.
That's the first time Eric and I met. It was the joke and the joke's been ever since. I'm kind of a big deal. But you
are. It's been going for 6 years now. People keep calling me a big deal. I figure people keep calling me a big deal. I should just embrace it.
Well, another,
and now I am a big deal.
Another great podcast, the Personal Profitability Podcast. Tell us what's going on over there.
Oh, we have some great interviews coming up. We have Elle from Couple Money. She's a good friend. We had a really awesome, fun chat. PT Philip Taylor, the man who founded the FinCon conference where Joe and I actually were all of us connected probably. He's on the show coming up. And also, I just launched a new personal profitability boot camp. It's a 1 week video series, totally free. Just sign up by email and a new lesson will show up in your inbox every day for a week.
Nice. And we'll link to that on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Mr. Groovy, so happy you could join us, man.
Thank you.
So was it everything you expected? We got absolutely nothing done, but we had a few left.
We stayed true to our calling.
We did.
We provided no useful information.
Absolutely. So tell me what's going on at the Freedom's Groovy blog.
Well, just what the world needs, another vlog. I'm going to start vlogging on a weekly basis. I'm going to go around my neighborhood. I'm going to pick up litter. I'm going to share my twisted thoughts on life and personal finance.
Well, that you learn from litter, like lessons from litter?
Yes. I'm going to bill myself as the world's richest litter picker-upper. Oh, and by the way, I'm very fascinated with Hillary. Hillary, are you familiar with Kelly McGonigal?
No.
Really? Mm-hmm. She's at Stanford University, willpower. You remind me a lot of her.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Check out YouTube, please.
How do you spell McGonigal?
McGonigal, I think. It's M-C.
It's G-A-L, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
G-O-N-I-G-A-L. Check it out. I'm telling you. You almost look like her, too.
I'll check it out.
Your secret finance doppelganger across the web.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they're really the same person. She's just.
Stanford and San Jose are like 20 minutes apart. You could be the same person. And we just don't know.
That's true.
It's so crazy. We may never know. Not the first conspiracy theory that we've had here on Stacking Benjamins. Probably not the last. Thanks for playing, guys.
Thanks.
Oh, my pleasure.
Oh, I'll stick a fork in this baby because it is done. Hey, guess what? We play a game, and I'm going to tell you a little more about that here in just a second. And we'll also talk a little bit about stuff going on here in the basement and things that are going to happen next week on the show. Excited about all that. But first, got to say a big thanks to everybody who went to stackybenjamins.com/SoFi. You know, SoFi is the place where you go when you're looking to save money. If you want to refinance your debt, head to stackybenjamins.com/SOFI because they're the leader in marketplace lending. Over 225,000 people have refinanced debt with SoFi. SoFi will help you finance your regular student loans, your Parent PLUS loans. They've funded over $15 billion in loans to date. Listen to this. They've saved members over $1.45 billion with a B. Our friend Dan Macklin at SoFi tells us it only takes a few minutes to find out how you can work with SoFi. So what are you waiting for? StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. Don't only handle student loans, by the way, but also personal loans if you're consolidating that credit card debt and also mortgages. They'll give you $100 if you use our link for your personal loan or student loan, StackyBenjamins.com/SoFi. And you could pop that $100 toward the interest on the loan. By the way, place to call SoFi number one where you want to go if you're looking at all of your debt or your checking account, savings account, whatever it might be, stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. You know what I like about Magnify Money? It's not just the fact that they have more comparisons of different financial products than any other website, that when you look at the things you use every day, like checking accounts, savings accounts, balance transfer options, CD rates, secured credit cards, personal loans, auto loans, small business loans, private student loans, credit monitoring, identity theft stuff, budget apps. Man, they have it all. But they also have a fantastic blog. If you head to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money, you know what? There's a link right on the front that can take you to your debt-free guide. It's a guide that helps you slash interest rates, boost your credit score, negotiate hard with your creditors, and become debt-free fast and forever. They put together a fantastic guide, stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. And you probably know that both Nick and Mandy Woodruff, who is the executive editor of the Magnify Money blog, have been on the show quite a bit. And they've been great radio. You can go back and listen to any of the shows that they've been on. And those are fantastic episodes and heavily downloaded. I think longtime listeners know what great radio they are. And they have a fantastic website there at Magnify Money. Let's talk first about the game. If you're brand new to the show, welcome to Stacking Benjamins. Friday is a little bit different format than Monday and Wednesday. Wednesday, OG and I are there. On Friday, we have, like we had today, a roundtable discussion about popular media pieces. But on Friday, also to entertain myself, I play a game. Here's how the game works. Either in the description of the show, the title of the show, or in the first couple minutes of the show, there's something that might not seem like it fits, and you take that thing that might not fit, you add it to other things and other shows that don't fit, and you come up actually with something that I'm looking for. And in this case, we had a little snafu 2 weeks ago. We didn't have the game. So we started 3 weeks ago, didn't have anything the week after that, had the game again last week and had it this week, and we'll have it all the way through the end of this 8-week period, which is coming up quickly now, by the way. We're not that far away from that at all. So let's talk about what's happening next week, shall we? By the way, great shows this week. Absolutely love. If you didn't listen on Monday to our discussion about where active investing is headed with two guys who are using algorithms with exchange-traded funds to have probably a much different active approach than you might have seen before, listen to that one. And then if you're somebody that likes motivational stories, how about Daniel Geffen? A guy that gets knocked down, gets back up, gets knocked down, gets back up, gets knocked down, gets back up. And finally, just a guy who's become very, very successful at everything that he does. So great episode on Wednesday as well. And of course, loved our roundtable today. Next week, well, on Monday, we've done this 3 times to get caught up, which is amazing. I love the fact that so many of you ask OG and I questions for the show. Got our 3rd and final letters episode of this 8-week period. That's coming up on Monday. Always a bunch of fun stuff that you crazy people ask us. And we're going to try to deliver on Monday. And then on Wednesday, if you had the money discussion in your family, you know, it's funny. We talk about the money discussion and people go, the money. I don't want to talk about the money discussion. Well, guess what? One of the most entertaining people to talk about the money discussion, somebody who's got surprising tips, Marcy Koeckler, who is in charge of investment strategy at Ameriprise Financial. She's coming down to the basement to talk about the money talk. We're not going to just talk about with spouses, significant others, friends, partners. We're going to talk about with kids, with aging parents. So no matter what situation you're in, Marcy's going to have something for you on Wednesday. And and Jamie Wise is here on Wednesday of next week too from the Buzz Index. He was part of our show last Monday, but Jamie's doing his normal what's the buzz online been like. And if you followed that since Jamie started coming around in September, he's always got some interesting stuff that social media is talking about with investing. And check this out next Friday, check out this app on our FreshBooks FinTech segment. FeeBelly is what it's called, and it helps you. It's an app that helps you look at legal contracts and find areas that might not be in your favor. So I've never seen anything like it. Very excited to have the CEO of FeeBelly down on the basement. And of course, we've got a fantastic roundtable featuring next week from the awesome Paychecks and Balances podcast, Rich Jones. Rich and his co-host Marcus, always a lot of fun on their show. Rich going to join us, part of our normal crew next Friday, who'll be back. So if you're missing the normal crew this week, they're back next week. But big thanks to everybody for sticking with us this week. If you told a friend about us, if you left us a review wherever you listen, we're so thankful for all of that support. Thanks again to Kent for the awesome socks and the cool t-shirt. Go stack some Benjamins, everybody. We'll see you back here on Monday.
Special thanks to Suzanne Lucas from evilhrlady.org. You'll find out more about the Evil HR Lady on her blog, evilhrlady.org. And as always, we'll have a link on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. And a big thanks also to Mr. Groovy from the Freedom is Groovy blog. Check it out at freedomisgroovy.com. Special thanks to Hillary Hendershot for stopping by. You'll find her Profit Boss podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, big thanks to Eric Rosenberg. You may know that he's kind of a big deal. You'll find Eric at the Personal Profitability Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And special thanks to Joe's mom for remembering that today is the day before April Fool's Day. Hey, write us about your best prank at joe@stackingbenjamins.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor.
What's wrong with you?
It's either this show or indigestion. I hope it's indigestion.
Why?
It'll get better in a little while.